Sometimes the fun begins when the paved road ends. Chevy Silverado 2500 HD is made to work hard and play hard on the road or off. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for details and experience life in HD.
Okay, back in the captain's chair, ready to set sail for another smooth ride on the seas of a podcast, huh, Reggie? My first mate. Hey, little buddy. Yeah, I'm the skipper. But I promise this will only be a one-hour tour, not a three-hour tour. And I expect that we will get back to the mainland. We will not get shipwrecked. I will make sure I guide this little one-hour tour to exactly where it's supposed to start and end. All right? Okay. So let's check all of our nautical little dials here. It looks like the dials are bouncing happily in the spots they're supposed to. So that's good news. I will do the three S's. You will hit the button, and we will get started. I will count down, but first, put it in the book, episode 219, 219er. All right? Here we go. Star, smile, strong. All right? Okay, little buddy, here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you find your favorite podcast. Whatever location or platform that you use to download your favorite podcast, we are there. So don't forget to subscribe to that platform and rate this podcast. And if you are so inclined, tell your friends, send them a message, send them a link, send them the good word that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. And if you're listening to it, why the heck aren't they? That's what I'd like to know. And also, your loyalty and your devotion and your recommendation is highly prized and highly appreciated. If you like what you hear, don't forget, all previous episodes of this podcast are available at WGNRadio.com. You go to the podcast section, you go to the prompt for Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and there you will find all previous 218 episodes, which can only mean one thing. Welcome to episode 219. 219er?
Yeah, welcome, right? We're on the runway 219er.
Welcome. Good to have you along. So, the last couple of weeks, I think justifiably so, the podcast has been a little on the serious side, addressing, confronting, opining, talking about what's been going on in the world. And it's been a weird month or so. We've seen, think about it, in the last month and a half, we have certainly seen things around us get a little crazier. We opened more of our culture and society over the last month or so, and despite some of our best intentions and best hopes that everything would go well, I think we're learning that you can't just cross your fingers and hope for the best. You have to sort of follow reality and follow the data and the science. And we have seen that the things have begun to escalate once again in terms of the COVID coronavirus spreading, which is not a surprise to those of us who have been looking at this in a more realistic way. Certainly, I am sure, a shock and a disappointment to those who thought that maybe this was just kind of a passing blip and that would just go away because we want it to. So I think that it's been responsible, and I think it's been appropriate that I have discussed the COVID situation over the last several weeks, because that's what's on our minds. Yes. You know, we look to entertainment as a diversion, right? As a distraction from some of those things. And I've certainly always tried to provide that, that kind of safe haven for you to have some fun, to get away from it all if you need to. And hopefully this is a place where that can be for you on a weekly basis, to have some fun. Here's some facts. Here's some funny things, some interesting, you know, perspectives on things. But hopefully at the end of the day, to sort of make you laugh, make you smile, and do take you away from some of those, the daily grinds. And the and certainly over the last several months, it's been a daily grind. And I get that. But I also think that it would be irresponsible to pretend like nothing's going on and to not address some of the things going on, and to maybe, in my own way, pass some of my thoughts and perspectives on to you. You may accept some of those, you may not. But what's important is that we listen to one another. I had an email from somebody this past week about my last podcast of last week, when I was saying that something is not better than nothing. And I was referring to the baseball season, which that podcast actually posted on Monday when the baseball season at that point, and who knows what's going to happen, received its biggest strike, if you will, when several players on the Florida Marlins, the Miami Marlins, came down with COVID and their games were canceled, and several games. And there's really a question what the future of the baseball season will be, as well as other team sports that are gearing up to start theirs. Now, I am recording this earlier than when I post it, so by the time this posts on Monday, for all we know, there won't be any more baseball season. It's hard to tell. Everything is kind of dangling in the balance, and to me, it just smacks of desperation at this point. I think the responsible thing to do would just be to say, hey, we tried, we gave it our best shot. This plan wasn't going to work on paper, and it wasn't working on paper, and it certainly wasn't going to work in real life, but everybody's with fingers crossed these days. We're finding out what fingers crossed do. It doesn't do much. Science and data will always prevail. But somebody sent to me, and as I say, I always appreciate your feedback on the podcast, positive or negative. Always open for certainly compliments. Love those. but if you've got a bone to pick with something I've said, I have no problems with that, and I'd love to hear your side of it. So one way or the other, it's for me, the podcast is about this dialogue that we're creating with one another. And just because we are quote-unquote friends in terms of people listening every week doesn't mean that we can't disagree on things. We don't have to agree on everything. I understand that. You don't agree with everything with you, even your best friend, the friend you've known the longest and you care for the most. You don't agree on everything. So that's okay. But what's important is that we listen. And this Jim, the listener, said, I don't agree with everything you said on that podcast, but I do admire your passion and your passion for it, and the way that you at least stand up for your opinion and the way that you offer it. And so that's why I keep listening, because at least you're committed to it and you're passionate about it and you're sharing that with it. And that's all I can do. I do have some very, hard-held opinions, and I am happy to share them, and I make a point to share them. And sometimes they're right and sometimes they're wrong, but at least I do try to do it in a way that explains them, explains why I feel, why I cultivated or came up with this perspective, and I offer them to you. And you can accept them or reject them, or don't even let them make a difference one way or the other. But my job here is to hopefully entertain and inform and share. And that's what I'm doing. So I really appreciated that email, because in my response to him, I said, look, thank you for that kind, because that's ultimately what I would hope to do. I hope at the very least, you don't have to agree with everything I say, but I hope you at least respect and appreciate the my efforts to share my opinions, share what I've seen or learned with you. and to allow you to make your decision. But I hope at the very least that you would at least respect the passion that I bring to this. I enjoy doing this. I enjoy sharing. I enjoy making a connection with you. And so that's what it's all about. And so that was potentially, I guess you could read that. Someone could read that as a negative email because he said, I don't agree with what you said. But I looked at it as a purely complimentary email to say, thank you. I'm glad you recognized and appreciated the passion with which I express my opinions, and you don't have to agree with them, and I may never turn you to my way of thinking, and that's okay. But what's important, especially in today's world when we seem so divided that we don't want to hear other opinions, is that we do listen to one another. I think that's what's important. Let's listen to each other. Even within the scope of a overall argument, you may not agree with someone on their overriding statement or opinion, but perhaps subcategories within their argument or their opinion may provide you with some insight, may provide you with some new information, may provide you with something that you had never thought about before, for at least you to consider it. You may reject it, but at least it made you think. And that's what I try to do. So I'm glad that, I hope that you just say, geez, Jim, you're getting so serious every week and, you know, lighten up. It's not about that. It's about being real. That's stripped of everything. I'm trying to be real on these podcasts, and I react to what I am seeing and experiencing. And over the last several weeks, I've just been seeing a lot of things going on in our reaction to the COVID crisis that I felt I needed to express. So I appreciate, once again, those listeners who have been loyal and continue to listen, and those who may agree or disagree, that's up to you. But I'm glad you're listening. But I will lighten things up today because I think I've gotten a lot of the bile out over the last several weeks, and I'm always jotting things down, and whatever happens or whatever I'm thinking about or something that pops in my mind, always jotting those things down. Is this something that I might be able to talk about? Is it worth talking about? And this is completely unrelated to anything going on in the outside world. This is just a good old kind of personal experience thing that Elton Jim is, I guess, known for, right? I guess. At least I've always tried to, share my idiosyncrasies and share some of my perils with you, and in both a satirical and ironic and hopefully funny and entertaining way. And I had to share this one. So I said, wow, there's a podcast. As I was watching this and experiencing, and it happened even a week ago, I already said, well, I know what I'm talking about next week. So about 2 or 3 weeks ago, we get a letter in the mail that says that in our neighborhood, there's going to be some major construction work being done on the streets. On the streets, on the curbs, and things like that. So just be aware that you're going to see over the next 2 or 3 weeks a lot of trucks, and a lot of disruption in the neighborhood. So it's kind of just a heads up to that. And okay. And they said there may be some streets closed and things like that. So just be aware, you may be driving around. And if your street is going to be impacted to the point of being a close, you will be notified beforehand and blah, 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 blah. Okay, good. So the village is doing their due diligence. Well, then one day, a couple of days after receiving that letter, I go out in the front of our house and I notice on the apron of my driveway, and by apron, I mean that's the part that it connects the last part of your driveway to the street, and in a kind of a regular driveway world, I guess, where the grass right before the street is, you know, there's the sidewalk, you know, there's your driveway, and then in a lot of neighborhoods, the driveway cuts in to the sidewalk for a piece there, one square's worth, and then where people can walk, and then the driveway begins again and slopes down into the street. So it's that apron part, the part that starts on the other side of the sidewalk and then slopes down into the street. And I noticed on that piece, there was a spray-painted arrow, a pink spray-painted arrow, and the arrow was pointing down the driveway toward the street. And I was like, well, I mean, I don't think that was a, I don't think that was vandalism. I don't know any group that that vandalizes with a pink arrow. And then I noticed that my next door neighbor on his drive, on their drive, had a similar pink arrow spray painted toward the street. So I'm assuming then that it looks like something's going to happen to our driveway is part of this reconstruction. I wasn't aware of that. I'm looking at my the apron of my driveway, and it doesn't, there's no major cracks. I didn't notice anything about this, and I always thought that was my, you know, my property. I was wondering then, after I saw this pink arrow spray painted on my driveway pointing toward the street, I didn't put it there. I don't think it was vandals. I don't think it was young street toughs. So it must have been part of this reconstruction project. And I was like, well, geez, this is interesting. I thought that was my driveway. Now I'm thinking, geez, is that whole stretch of grass on the other side of the sidewalk from the sidewalk to the street, is that my grass? Or is that the village's grass? I know we have trees on that patch of grass between the sidewalk and the street, and the village every year or so, 2 years, will come and trim those trees. I know I can trim them myself, but they do a major trimming. So I'm wondering now, when I see my driveway perhaps going to have some kind of a reconstruction as part of this village project being done, I was like, I wonder if that part of the driveway is mine. Is my property line just up to the front grass and it stops at the sidewalk, at the beginning of the sidewalk? So now I was wondering. But clearly there was a pink arrow. So I waited patiently to see what the result of the pink arrow would be. And sure enough, a couple of days later, some workmen came by and started to, right in front of the house by the curb, very quickly, didn't take them much time. It's amazing what these machines can do with concrete. And they just came and kind of were cutting some pieces of the street, not even lifting anything up, but just making like an initial cut very quickly. I'm like, okay. And still wondering what was going on. Still don't know why, you know, I'm looking around. The apron of my driveway was not cracked. It didn't seem like it was any major problem. And now they were cutting the concrete of the street right past my curb. So I didn't know what was going to be going on here. I didn't really. We did get another letter talking that our driveway was going to be fixed, and that it may take 7 to 10 days, this entire project. And they didn't, but it didn't really explain the details as to why. I still didn't know why, but I was informed now. So at least I got a confirmation now that the pink, the pink arrow was indeed put there, not by young street toughs, but by the village. And that was obviously a signal to the workmen that this driveway needs to be fixed. And so one day they came and cut, and then we got this other letter. In that same letter, it said, so tomorrow you have to park your car on the other side of the street by 7 o'clock, and you won't be able to use your driveway until it's done. So expect 7 to 10 days. You won't be able to use your driveway. So you'll have to park the car on the street and blah, blah, blah. okay, no big deal. But at least they told us. So this was good. So, you know, I love rules. I love lists. You know that. I like to follow the rules. I was tempted to be my usual compulsive self and park the car across the street like the night before so that it would certainly be parked across the street when the workmen came. They said by 7 o'clock. I was thinking of even doing it, like I said, the night before to just make sure in case I overslept or something happened, you know. The car would be there, wouldn't be in their way. They wouldn't have to ring the doorbell and everything like that. And, you know. So I was tempted. But I was like, no, that's being a little too compulsive. They said 7 o'clock. I usually wake up early anyway. I could move it tomorrow morning. Well, I'm glad I didn't. Not that it would be a big deal. Because that first day, when they were supposed to come, they didn't come. So at least I was able to use my driveway for one more day. Much more convenient. But then I was like, okay, I'm going to definitely, you know, make sure the car is there the next day because, you know, they gave me a warning on Tuesday. And I did go out and did park it there and they never showed up. And so at night I came back and put it back in the garage. But I'm like, okay, tomorrow I have to make sure, definitely get it out there before 7, which I did. Well, no, which I didn't do actually. And they rang the doorbell because I don't know if they're coming or not. I don't know. And ding, ding, ding. Hey, can you move your car because we're going to get started? Oh, wow. Okay. It was like 10 o'clock. So that's why I didn't even think they were coming again. So, okay, do that. And this is when I had this amazing experience. I was witnessing, to me, what looked like a miracle. It was like seeing the Grand Canyon for the first time, which I have seen. It was like seeing Mount Rushmore, which I have seen. It was like seeing any natural, Mount Rushmore isn't a natural type of thing, but it's one of these awe-inspiring things. I was awe-inspired when I saw this this event happen. So they said, oh, yeah, we need you to move your car. Fine. So I moved the car, and I still don't hear anything. And they drove away. So they're doing work all over the neighborhood. So they're just probably preparing different streets, different stuff, and they're going to, you know, do it in whatever order they have planned. So fine. So now I start hearing the sound of machinery. And crashes, you know. In the neighborhood, I'm hearing, so something's going on. You know, you can tell. But I'm not overly nosy. I'm nosy enough, like we all are. I'm always looking out the front window, you know, wondering what's going on. My wife does that too. And these days, you know, aside from television, that's our only an entertainment. And so, so now I notice that the noise is getting louder. About an hour in, I hear the noise, and it sounds like it's in a distance. So I know that work is finally going to be done now on this big reconstruction project that's going on in the village, but I don't really know the extent of it, and all I know is that my driveway's something's going to happen to my driveway. Now, I assume that when they say they're going to fix my driveway, when you see them do, you know, when there's kind of street repair, a lot of times what they'll do is that they, you know, they don't tear the whole street apart. Like say they're, you know, going to, you know, fix a pothole or some really big dent or even something around a sewer. You know, they don't tear the whole street apart. They sort of take the first layer off. They use some kind of a driven machine, I think, that sort of just, you know, scrapes the top layer off and leaves that kind of almost sandpaperish kind of look or feel where it looks like it was just kind of roughed up a little, you know, not broken, not destroyed, but just kind of like if you had a huge you know, like little wrought iron scrubby thing and just scrubbed it, you know, like some sandpaper or something. Although it would be with concrete, you know, they're just the top layer, you know what I mean? And they just kind of put the asphalt over. So I'm assuming that that's what they're going to do. I don't see any cracks in the apron of my driveway. So I'm assuming that they're just going to, for whatever reason, and hey, you know what? I'm getting a free renovation here on my driveway, at least not the whole drive, but at least the, you know, the most important part, the on and the off ramp, if you will. So I've got no complaints, but I don't really know the extent of what they're doing. I just know that there's a, you know, pink arrow, and they're going to do some work, and it's going to take, you know, several days. But I assume that they're just going to maybe, for whatever reason, give it a new top layer, right? They're just going to do something, you know, do that sandpapering, that concrete sandpapering of the old concrete, and put in another layer, right? That's all. I don't know anything about this because I've told you many times. I know how to do very little when it comes to, you know, manual labor, real work. I have the utmost respect for anyone who's a tradesman. Anyone. I give you so much credit because you have learned a skill and you are an expert at it, and you can look at a situation and determine what's wrong, and your experience and your know-how allows you to fix that. And I've seen it, you know, with plumbers and with electricians and with maintenance people and, you know, guys that cut trees. You know, we've had trees cut down, and I'm watching somebody cut down a tree is an amazing thing. It's an amazing experience, like the one I'm going to tell you about now. But this, we had a major tree cut down in our yard maybe 7 or 8 years ago, maybe 10 years ago now, maybe now that I think about it. And it was a huge tree, and it was an amazing process. And the guys that are doing it, they go about it with such workmanlike focus and expertise. And there's this equipment involved, and especially with a tree, a lot of times these guys have to climb up, and they put on this gear, and they're climbing up a tree. It's amazing. So I have the utmost respect for anyone who has a trade. You fix a car, because I don't know how to do anything. As I've said many times, for whatever reason, it's the way you're brought up, whatever it is, your mindset, whatever it is. But, you know, my motto is, call the man. Or when I have tried initially in my life to do things and I haven't done them correctly and I'm frustrated, I often had used the phrase, isn't there a guy who does this? And there is, and I'm usually not the guy. and to borrow a line from one of my favorite TV shows, there's a great episode from the Andy Griffith Show where Aunt B's freezer isn't working and she's calling Gomer to fix it and she's trying to fix it. And finally, Andy says, just call the man. Call the man. And that to me is the best way. When you have something broke, call the man. Call, and these days, call the person, right, I guess. But call an expert. If you have a toothache, you don't go to a veterinarian. You go to a dentist who knows what to do. If you have an electrical problem, you don't call a plumber. You call an electrician. Call the man. Call the guy that does it. The guy who's been trained, or the person who has been trained, who has experience, who knows how to do it. Not no guesswork. I've oftentimes ruined what I tried to fix, then the person who I call the man, and they have to undo the damage I did and then do the job. An extra step, extra payment, extra loss of time, aggravation. No, I learned my lesson early on. I let go of my ego and said, I can't do this. I will call the man. And it's probably cost me a little more money out of my pocket, but it certainly has saved me a lot of time, a lot of aggravation, a lot of frustration, because when I call that person, I know it's done, and I know it's done right, and I don't have to worry about it anymore. The extra dollars it may cost is worth the peace of mind. And if you are someone who fixes things, if you are a putterer, if you're a handyman around the house or a handy person, more power to you. You save a lot of money if you know how to do things. If a parent or an older brother or sister, whoever taught you how to do those things, you don't even realize what a great advantage that is. It's an amazing advantage to be able to fix stuff like that around the house on your own. But I think it's also, if you don't know how to do it, it's good to be honest with yourself, because you create more problems the more you deny. So I have the utmost respect for any tradesman. You fix windows, you're a carpenter. Anyone who fixes or builds things, I have great respect for you, because I can't do that. And I marvel at how they come in and look at it and go, here's what it is. Wow, that's great. And I oftentimes watch them to maybe pick up some hints of, in case something happens, I'll ask, is there something that I could have done? And sometimes they will be nice and say, yeah, you know what, the next time this happens, here's what you do. And if it's not too complicated, I'll watch and I'll learn, and I then will do that. Sometimes I look at the job and I say, my gosh, and I thought I was going to fix this. This has turned out to be a huge project, and I thought I was going to even begin to fix this. I know when I'm out of my league. So once again, have great respect for all tradesmen. So I hear the noise getting closer to my house of this rumbling. Clearly, you know, concrete is something, you know, there's loud blasts, you know, not explosions, but, you know, big booms, and you could hear machinery grinding, and you're just hearing the sound of stuff going on, and it's not just casual stuff. There's some major work going on here. There's some tonnage being moved and pushed, and sure enough, I look out the side window and I look at the corner, and yeah, they're destroying the curbs, man. There's a big old dump truck just sitting there, and there's a bunch of guys around, you know, waving their hands and pointing, and the big old dump truck is sitting right in the middle there, and I see this other guy in some kind of contraption, and he's, you know, digging away at the ground. I see this from a distance, though, so I can just hear most. I can't really see what's going on. I see the players. I see the activity, but I really can't see the detail. But it's obvious something big's going on here. And yeah, so the construction project in the neighborhood has begun. So I go back to whatever I'm doing. And now, about 45 minutes later, the sound is even louder, to the point where it sounds like, you know, it's in my house. So I'm once again curious. And you got to love, you know, the door that has the window that you can peek out through the you know, through the drape. You know, it's okay to look through the peephole. But, you know, when you look through the peephole, it gives you a very, you know, cockeyed view of the world out there, and it doesn't really give you a very good perspective. You can see who's right in front of you if you know who it is, and that's the whole idea of the peephole, right? Look in front of you to see who's there, and if it's someone you know, you open the door. If not, you don't. Now, thankfully, you know, we have a lot of security around, and we've got another, you know, screen door, so it's not just the window out there in terms, but so since we do have another layer of door, I can look out my window and see what's going on around the neighborhood. Just a little, you know, you have to do it. I always wonder from the outside. Just thinking about this now. So when I just take the curtain on the front door and move it just a tad to the left, sometimes if someone's out near the front there and doing something, you just want to see what's going on, you know. You kind of move the drape just a tad so you can see. without being obvious. But I always wonder, I mean, is anybody seeing me watch? I don't know. I mean, when I'm doing something in the front, or I'm doing something, I'm not looking around to see if people are watching me. So I'm assuming that others aren't looking at them if they're, you know, cutting the grass or doing something in the front that's kind of weird. Not weird, but just not, you know, not the average thing. Why are people congregating in the front of my house, or what's going, you know what I mean? Stuff like that. But you have to be deceptive. You know, you have to be inconspicuous. But I always wonder, even as much as you are inconspicuous, I'm still moving that drape, even ever so slightly, even if it's an inch, to give me some little vantage point of what's going on out there. I'm still moving it. And I guess someone can, I could catch someone's eye, and they're looking and they're saying, oh, someone's staring, you know. So maybe I'm being like that. I mean, our joke in the house is, when I was a little kid, our next door neighbor, we had an elderly couple who lived next door, and they were nice people. But at this point, I don't even know how old they were at the time. They were probably my age now, right? But at the time, they seemed like they were 100 when I was 10 or 8. You know, we're playing in the yards and in the street, I mean, in the alley and in the front, you know, and you're running on people's grass and you're riding your bikes. You know, you're doing what kids do. You're playing, you know, baseball or hockey or basketball in the alley, and the ball or the puck bounces into the yard, and you got to go get the ball in the yard. And there's, you know, there's always those neighbors that are a little, at least there used to be, where they're always a little like, don't come in my yard with the padlocks and the chains on there, where you had to hop the fence, or they would take your ball. You know, there was always a couple of those neighbors, and these people were those neighbors. The husband was fine. He didn't seem to care, but the wife, for some reason, just loved to stare out the window when we would play basketball or baseball or hockey in the alley. She seemed to just like, she wasn't watching it as a spectator. I don't think she was wondering who was winning. I think she was watching to see, is that ball or that puck going to go in my yard? And if it does, I want to see what the hell they're going to do and try to get it. And if they do, I'm going to open the door and peer out. That's what she used to do. And she would send the fear of God in us. And sometimes we would just have to leave the ball or the puck there. And sometimes she'd come out and take it. And it was, I never really understood that. Especially when you're a kid. I mean, that sounds incredible. As I've grown older and I own my own, yard, and I mean, I understand to some extent you don't want people ruining your property or acting as, you know, disrespecting it. But it was a little over the line. In fact, years later, when I got a little older, say 5 or 10 years, about 6 years later, and I used to cut the grass in the neighborhood, for money, I would cut her grass. And as time went on, I guess she mellowed, and I didn't, you know, we weren't afraid of her anymore, and she was paying me to do the grass, and we got along fine. And I used to use her lawnmower because it was a bigger lawnmower. So I'd go down in her basement, and the first time I went down there, she showed me where the lawnmower is. And I had to, you know, so I'm going down there. Then after a while, I, you know, just would go down there on my own. She'd open the door, and I would go and get it. And one day I was putting the lawnmower away. It wasn't the first time I went down there. It was early on in my grass-cutting history with her. And, you know, everybody has different things in their basements. And I was going to put the lawnmower away in the corner where she had it. And as I was wheeling it there and just kind of looking around, I noticed a box in a corner. And I was kind of intrigued because I thought I saw some baseballs in there. And sure enough, they were our baseballs that she had taken when there was a foul ball or somebody threw the ball and it went into the yard when we were playing baseball or catch or something, and you know, you'd hit a foul ball and it'd go in the yard, And there's those times when she was home and she was watching, she was on the prowl. And she would go out there and, you know, make her presence known, and then she would go and take the ball. And, you know, when we were a little kid, you never know what happens to those balls, right? I mean, where do they go? You're not really thinking about it. But then in reality, you know, when I saw this box, I'm like, yeah, you know, she took those balls, you know, as some kind of a, you know, act of superiority. But now it all came home. It's like, yeah, where do those balls go? Well, apparently they went in this box. And I would say there was at least 10 or more, or if not more, of balls. And there were some that I completely recognized. Like, oh my God, there's the rubber-coated. There's my favorite rubber-coated league ball that I used to love to play catch with. There it is. I thought I lost it. No, you know what? It was lost in the yard, and now it's been in her box for 10 years. And so I even, you know, I had enough of a good enough relationship with her. I said, you know, I found a, I didn't say the balls you took, you know what I mean? I didn't want to make her feel guilty. But I said, geez, you know, I was putting the lawnmower away and I saw a box of baseballs. I said, I don't know. I mean, do you mind if I take those? And she didn't, I don't even think she really even remembered. It had been 5 years ago. We had grown up. We had stopped playing in the alley, and it's that type of thing, you know. And I think it was just some weird power trip at that time. She didn't even remember she had them. And she said, what? And I said, yeah, there's a box of balls. I said, you know, you still play? She goes, yeah, take them. I think she may have even said, go ahead, take them. They're yours. I felt like saying, yes, they are mine. But yeah, so I don't want to say her name, but you know, she would always be looking out the window. She was looking out the front window. If we were out there, she was looking out the side windows. She was looking out the back window. She'd sit on the back porch. It was an enclosed porch, but she would sit out there while we were playing, you know, hockey or basketball or baseball, and just waiting for that ball to go in there, or the puck or something. And so now when either I look out the window or if my wife is looking out the window and what's going on in the neighborhood, I will call her by the name of my former neighbor, Mrs. Blank. So I'll just say, hey, Mrs. Blank, what's going on out there today? And I do it too. But so I hear this noise now that sounds like it is really close. The first pounding and crumbling and, you know, of concrete sounded farther away, and it was, but now it sounded like it was right in the front room. So I went and did my favorite Mrs. Blank and opened the drape of the front window of the door and looked out, and whoa, what I saw threw me for a loop. I was like a kid in a candy store. I was in awe. I was in shock. I was like a little kid who just saw his favorite toy in a store window. I was like a kid at Christmas time. I didn't know what to do. It's so filled with I don't even know what the word is. It's just awe. Yeah, that's all I could say. I was just excitement and awe, and I wanted it, you know. So my wife's working from home, and I see this thing happening in front of me, and I'm like, and first I'm taking it in for myself for a couple of minutes, and then I'm like, oh no, I have to share this right now. Of course, if I was like the normal person of today's world, if I indeed was a 21st century occupant, and if I did indeed have a, you know, an iPhone, most people in today's world would have had their iPhone right on their hip or in their hand, and they would have been recording this right off the bat. I mean, most people see things through their phone before they even see them through their eyes, right? They're taking pictures of stuff and seeing things through their iPhone without even seeing it first with the bare eye. But that's not me, because I don't carry my phone with me all the time, and I have a flip phone. And yes, there is a camera on it, but it would not be able to, you know, zoom in and do all this cool stuff. I mean, you know, it's basically take a quick click of a picture. So yeah, there's a disadvantage. That's not the first thing I go for. I don't have my phone with me. I probably could have taken a cool picture of this and recorded it, as well and shot video and posted on Facebook and shown everybody this. But, you know, once again, I'm thinking and I'm living old school. So I'm going by real experience. I see this and the first thing I want to do is not record it or take a picture of it, but I want to tell someone else. So I run up the stairs and my wife is working upstairs but then she's on a Zoom call. So I open the door and I'm ready to say, oh my God, you got to see this. And then I notice she's talking on a Zoom thing. So I don't want to photo bomb or Zoom bomb her. So I close the door, but I'm so excited. It's like I'm just seeing Santa. And I wait maybe another couple minutes and I go back in there and she's still on there. And I go, but I don't want to miss what's going on. So I go back down there and I'm watching. And then I try one more time and she's still on the phone. And I'm like, okay, fine. I guess she's going to miss this. But I go back down and then now there is a crowd gathering. Because it's been apparent that this is truly something that is worth capturing and experiencing, and it doesn't happen every day. At least we don't see it. The funny thing is it does happen every day. And to these tradesmen and these guys that are doing it, it happens every minute of every day of their lives. This is their job. It's no big deal. But to us, the layman, the civilians, the innocents, the people that don't know how to do anything, who have no trade, this is a miracle. I mean, I heard choirs of angels happening. It was religious. It was biblical. And my next-door neighbors had come out. And, of course, my next-door neighbor, she's recording it on her phone. She's totally 21st century. You know, I'm still churning butter over here. But, so she's recording. So I know that I know it's not just me thinking that this is cool. Because now a small crowd is gathering across the street. And next door neighbors. And so now usually, you know, I am very, you know, I don't even know what the word is. I don't want to say antisocial because that doesn't sound good. But I'm not a big block guy. You know, we don't go to the block parties. Right. I know that sounds bad, but we just don't. It's not kind of my scene. And we are cordial with our neighbors, but we're not big buddies with our neighbors. We didn't have any kids. We don't have any kids. So we never bonded in the neighborhood with the kids in the school. So we, you know, and it's a two-way street. You know, if you don't have a kid, a lot of times those parents and those neighbors who do, you're off the list too. They don't come knocking on your door because what do they need you for? You're not going to babysit for them. You're not going to be able to talk about what's going on in school or what's going on in the Little League or what's going on in Girl Scouts, right? So you're kind of invisible to them too. So it's kind of a two-way street. I will admit that we don't go out of our way to extend ourselves, but at the same time, neither do they. I mean, I remember when our first house, we moved into a house and, you know, we first couple of days there, you know, a lot of people were coming to the door. We were moving in and, oh, welcome to the neighborhood. And, oh, do you have any kids? And we said no. And we never saw those people again. So that's where I sort of learned my lesson. And maybe that wasn't an unfair lesson. Maybe I was projecting that experience on these neighbors here when we moved into this house. Because I'm like, well, you know, because I never saw those people again for 3 years. So I thought, well, that's the way people are. So maybe that was our fault. I don't know. But whatever the case is, you know, I am certainly cordial and I will talk to the neighbors, but it's not like we're big buddies. And every so often I will make an appearance in the front to either get the newspaper. And I recently canceled our newspaper subscription. So now I don't even open the door for that. So every so often they may see me peer out and put my, you know, left or right hand into the mailbox and get the mail. And sometimes they'll see me picking some weeds in the front. And they'll be, oh, there's that guy we heard about that lives there. So I don't know if I'm the neighborhood curmudgeon. I don't know if I'm the neighborhood scary guy. I don't know if I'm the neighborhood mean guy. I'm just the guy that minds his own business. And I don't mind that at all. if that's my reputation in the neighborhood as, oh, they just mind their own business. I guess in today's world, that's a negative because everybody is, uber social. But I'm happy just minding my own business. You know, I don't need to get into any dramas or, any you know, neighborhood spats. It makes life much simpler, much less frustrating, much less aggravating if you just kind of mind your own business. Well, this I couldn't. I could not mind my own business on. It was too monumental. And when I saw other people coming out of their homes to watch this, I knew that this was an experience worthy of actually coming outside in front of people, which is a big deal. They, you know, it's like almost like we think that guy exists. We've heard rumors of him. There are stories and myths about him. We've never seen him. We do think he lives there, but we can't be sure. We do see lights on in that house. We think someone lives there, but we can't be sure. I mean, the grass is cut. You know, everything seems okay, but we've never seen anybody live there. Weird. So I mean, this is a big deal for me now to make an appearance on the front lawn with other people there. But I had to. And you say, Jim, what the hell? What was this that would make you walk out of your cocoon? Not only were they fixing our driveways, my driveway and our next door neighbor's with the pink arrow, not only are they going to fix it, they were replacing it, right? They were taking the concrete out. They were getting to dirt and mud and filler rocks, right? They were replacing the driveway apron, not just fixing it. They were replacing it. Once again, I don't know why. It seemed to be in good shape. Who knows? Whether it was water drainage, I don't know. But all I know is when I looked out that window, I was in awe. And here's what I saw. Once again, amazing talent, amazing ability. There was a guy in some kind of contraption. I don't know what you call it. There may be people that work in construction. There may be people that work in concrete. Maybe you know what this thing's called. If you do, I would love for you to Facebook me and tell me what the hell this contraption was. But it was a guy who was sitting in his little compartment, and this piece of equipment had like a long arm and like a scoop, you know, like a giant claw. And this guy, this arm was huge. There was the dump truck right next to it, and he was literally with this machine. I mean, the guy who was working this, it's just amazing too. It was like watching Iron Man. It really was. Because there was a guy, if he weighed 115 pounds, it was a lot. He was a small guy, very skinny, but when he was sitting in this machine, surrounded by these levers and these steering wheels and these brakes and this joystick, perhaps, that worked this huge metal arm, and then, you know, up and down, and then maneuvered with grace and elegance and just you know, pure talent, manipulated this big giant claw. And he literally, using this machine, this giant arm with this claw, he didn't just break the concrete of the apron of my neighbor's driveway. He literally lifted the giant, it was in two pieces. You know, there's a little, you know, midway in the apron. There's one piece of concrete, and then there's another piece to make up the, you know, one piece from the, you know, halfway, but from the sidewalk half in, and then another from halfway into the street. Well, he first started with the one closer to the street. And I mean, you know, I figured, okay, they're breaking this. They're not just going to scrape it. They're not just going to do the sandpaper thing like I described earlier. They're taking this out. But I figured they're going to break it, right? No. With this machine, I don't know what it's called. I'd love to know. I tried to go online. I couldn't really find what it was called. Some kind of claw thing I saw. You know, I don't know if it's a tractor. I don't know what you call it. To me, it was a miracle worker. This guy was I was watching an artisan at work. It was like Picasso. This guy is maneuvering and steering this giant arm with this mandible, with this, you know, this maneuverable claw. He's digging under the concrete and literally lifts this big giant piece of concrete, the whole piece, into the air, balances it in the mouth of this claw, and then swings the arm over and dumps it into the awaiting truck that has already giant pieces of concrete from the work they had done just earlier on the curbs. And then he goes, and then he swings the arm back and goes for the other piece. And I mean, it was a sight to watch, because as he lifted up these giant slabs of concrete intact, not broken, I couldn't believe. I mean, these things have to weigh, I don't even know how much, but this machine was acting like they weighed like a feather. And the way he was guiding this thing, and the slab was not teetering off. It didn't fall. The way he picked it up, and then it was the way it was in the jaws of this thing when he swung the arm over. It didn't fall. It wasn't teetering. This guy knew exactly how to do this. I was just dumbfounded. And he went after the second piece, lifted it up, and boom! In 2 minutes. There was no driveway there. No driveway. Gone. Just dirt, sod, and some rocks that were underneath the concrete. 5 minutes before that, there was a driveway there that cars could go on and off. Now, just an imprint of a former driveway apron filled with dirt and rocks and grass. Unbelievable. We're watching this with my neighbor, and I'm in shock, and I'm so mad that my wife is missing this, because it was truly a sight. But now I'm excited because my driveway's next. So I get to see this a second time. How many times, you know, usually miracles happen one time and you're lucky enough to see them. I was going to have a chance now to see a miracle for the second time. And sure enough, he backs up his tractor, whatever this thing is called, and now he's going at my driveway apron. I'm already in awe of what he's done with the first one. But now what's interesting is, because it wasn't my driveway, now I'm a little more interested in, okay, he better do a good job on this. Before, I'm just marveling at the pure majesty of pulling up this concrete in whole pieces and dumping it. It was quite a sight. But now when it's my driveway, I'm still in awe of it, but I'm also, he better not ruin the grass. Now I'm certain, because now it's my driveway. So suddenly all that stuff kind of changed. I'm like, okay, he better, you know, he did it really nice to theirs. He didn't have to cut too much of their grass. You know, it looks still intact, and he better do the same thing on mine. He better not lose all of his skills suddenly. He better not do a half-baked job. He did a great job there. Let's make sure he does the same thing, because now it's my driveway. So there's a little of that weirdness creeping in, but I'm still in awe. And here we go. And now everybody's waiting, because now they've seen it happen one time. And as I said, now we're going to see a miracle for the second time, and we are looking forward to it. And sure enough, there he goes. Pulls up the one first slab closest to the street, intact. You know, he first went on the side. He didn't, the grass was not really disturbed too much. He had to actually tilt those jaws a little to get under the concrete. And he lifted it like you were peeling a piece of tape off of something. I mean, this huge slab of concrete intact, it came up like nothing. And there it was in the air, and boom, into the dump truck. Well, then he stops, and I see him talking to the dump truck driver, and then he gets back in his thing. He lifts up the second piece now. He lifts it up. He swings it over again, but he doesn't dump it. He swings it back. And now this huge piece of concrete is hovering over my front grass by those trees I was telling you about, by that front grass by the street. It's hovering in these jaw, in this jaw. And then he stops his machine, gets out, and motions to the guy, and the dump truck leaves. So apparently that dump truck, he felt, was too full. So now, talk about another sight. I wish I had my camera. This giant piece of concrete is hovering in the jaws of this machine, you know, 20, 30 feet in the air, waiting for the new dump truck to come. So at one moment, it's a marvel, once again, to see this piece of concrete being handled like it's a piece of cardboard, because that's the way this machine is handling all this stuff. But at the same time, I'm thinking, oh my God, I mean, what if this piece of concrete falls out? It could kill someone. It could destroy my grass. I mean, you know, this is a major piece of concrete just sort of hovering in the air there, waiting for this dump truck. Well, thankfully, he lowered it a bit, so it wasn't as high now. So if it did fall, it wasn't going to. But it was still, it had to weigh, a ton? I don't know. Let's say it was heavy, okay? Well, then, within 5 or 10 minutes or so, the other truck comes, and he lifts it up, swings it over, boom. And now my driveway, at one time, a ramp for me to come and go as I please from my house, is now nothing, as I said, but sod, rocks, and dirt. And just imprint of what used to be a driveway apron. Well, I'll tell you, when that was done, we just all of my neighbors looked at each other like, did you just see what happened here? This is unbelievable. And we were all the same way. We were all just kind of shaking our heads. And this guy who was doing it, he didn't even think twice, didn't even look twice. Hey, man, I do this, you know, 10 hours a day, 5 days a week. What's the big deal? But to us, the uninitiated, the uninitiated, the civilians, the wimps, though we can't do anything, it was quite a sight. And I was talking to the village engineer who was there looking at what, making sure this all was being done. And I was marveling to him. I said, I've never seen anything like this. And he said, yeah, isn't it amazing how they just maneuver that equipment? I was so tempted, but I didn't want to embarrass the guy that did it. But I was really tempted to go up to him and just shake his hand and say, thank you for letting me watch you at work. You are a true artisan. You are a true craftsman. You are a true tradesman. You are just, you're way more of a man than I ever am. So I have to say that I was not expecting to see one of the eight marvels of the world. And if you're in the construction business, you probably see things even crazier than that. You know, if you work on a building construction or anything, or they're putting up, you know, major beams, building skyscrapers or anything like that, I'm sure you're saying, you're going, Jim, what the heck is the big deal? I see that every day. I do that every day. But the ease and the expertise at which this guy was maneuvering this machine, clearly, he was very experienced, knew what he was doing. There was never a hesitation, and it was just a marvel to watch. And I guess the moral of the story is we can find things to entertain us on a daily basis if you look for them. You know, at the end of the day, this was a construction project of getting rid of some concrete. That's what it looked like on the work order. But if you saw that happen for a good 15 minutes, that was quite a sight. That was quite an experience. So in these days when we're trying to find diversions, we keep talking about diversions and we keep talking about, you know, we want some things to, you know, to make things, you know, exciting, or we want the new normal, whatever it is. Oh, or so. There's stuff happening every day that we take for granted. And maybe during this weird time that we're in this shutdown, maybe it's time to stop and notice of what's going around us and appreciate some what we've considered mundane, usually something that would never even interest us or we would never even think twice about watching. In this case, it became a show. In this case, it became an event. At the end of the day, it was just a piece of work, getting rid of the concrete. But for those of us who were watching it, this was a treat. This was something different, something cool, something worth experiencing, and now something worth sharing. So if I leave you with one message today, is don't take everything for granted. Now is the time to keep your eyes open. Keep looking out that window. Keep moving that drape a little. Watch what's going on. And take a little time to appreciate some simple things. Some things you may never have noticed. But take a look at them. See what's going on. And appreciate them. Maybe that's the diversion you need. Maybe you don't need baseball and all these other outside diversions that can't happen in this COVID world. We're seeing that. They can't happen right now. So stop trying to make them happen because they can't happen and they're just going to disappoint you. But maybe take a look around at some of the stuff that happens on a daily basis that you take for granted, that can also provide you a little distraction and diversion. Maybe it's a bird feeding its babies, or squirrels running up and down a tree, whatever. You don't even pay attention to that. But now you have some time, pay attention. My message to you is sometimes we can marvel at the ordinary. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe, to rate this podcast, and most importantly, spread the word and tell your friends. Send them a link, send them a message that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. And as always, your loyalty and your devotion and your feedback is most appreciated. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. I'm Jim Tirano. I hope you enjoyed episode 219. This has been Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of the web to your screens.